Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hi, Jodi. How are you?
Hi, Eleni. It's great to see you again.
You too. You too. You're just back from yet another trip. Tell us more.
So this is actually funny timing that we're talking about it, because this morning I was thinking about, like, where did I eat when I was on this last trip? And I was mixing up this trip with the trip that I took 2 weeks ago. They were both to LA and they were both going for conferences.
Gosh.
So, you know, there's like conference breakfast, conference lunch. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't like separate the two in my brain. I was getting everything mixed up together.
So there was not like a standout meal, I take it, from these trips.
Well, it wasn't just that. It was just that when you're in these events, there's like the meetings, the sessions, and then there's the catered meal that's, you know, like there's a buffet. And I don't, like, everything was so similar about the way that two conferences were run that they meshed together into one in my brain. But right. I actually was very recently in LA for ProcureCon marketing, and it was a great event. I'm definitely going back next year.
Oh my gosh. I attended that last year, the previous year, and it was amazing. It was like one of my favorite events. It was such a great mingling opportunity. And you had a panel, right?
Yes. Well, I had two really special moments. One moment was to present our ad age data on stage. Mm-hmm. So this was data we collected over the summer. We did a survey with Ad Age of over 250 decision makers at brands, so our clients, and we asked some questions about what they really want in an agency partner. And no surprise to us, they really want empathy, right? An agency that really can be in their team's shoes and the shoes of their core customers, responsive. So I was able to present this data to these stakeholders who are the part of the decision makers. So many of the people in the room who are watching me present might have actually contributed to the survey study and they might not have known it.
Wow, that's really cool. So it was a good, you know, back and forth, a good crowd.
Yes. And the second session that I presented at was actually a fireside chat with a lead procurement person from a beverage company, actually a liquor company. And we dove very, very deep into agency scorecards. Mm-hmm. So what's so fun for me and you in these situations is we get to see like the total language of the procurement team. It's like all the behind the scenes, a curtain is pulled back. And I made the fireside chat very, very engaging with the audience. I have, you know, standards that I have for when I present on stage, and I need an audience engaged and involved and participating. So we actually like called on people, like, you know, like they would, if they're in the audience, it's fair game. And there were so many people who contributed in a big way into this conversation.
Oh, I love that. It's so important to get people involved. I feel like it keeps it so dynamic and you get to hear. I mean, that's what we are there for, is to learn from each other. It's not a one-dimensional topic. So it's so great to learn more and dig in. What were some of the themes that came out of your discussions?
Well, this idea of a two-way street between agency and brand team. So the procurement team works so hard to get these deals done, right? Mm-hmm. They want these relationships to last. They don't want the brand team to get frustrated with the agency and want to end the relationship. They don't want the agency to get frustrated with the brand team and the relationship. You know, they're matchmakers. So they want to have a sustained relationship. And so much time and money goes into this process. Mm-hmm. So they are, I use the word matchmaker. The themes were dating, engagement, wedding, marriage, couples therapy. So everything that happens in one's personal life when coupling up, it's the same dynamic that happens in these business relationships. And those procurement people really are sort of like the therapists and the guide in all of these situations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. It's so interesting, like, how these parallels are happening. I feel like you've actually been talking about this, like, you know, it's dating, it's marriage for so many years now. And like hearing other people in these groups experience similar themes is really interesting to see.
I think the reason, Eleni, I always spoke about these relationships as like dating, our client relationships, dating, marriage, and whatnot, goes back to how important empathy is in our day-to-day and how empathetic we are, not just with the end user customer, right? The customer standing at CVS looking at a wall of hair color, trying to find the right shade, but with our client team, right? With that CMO and their team, the CEO, the investors, like we really understand the pressures that they're under every day. We understand what is essential about their job. And we also understand how we can really help, you know, clear the air. We can break tiebreaker. We can be the tiebreaker, right? When people aren't aligned. There's so much of what we do that's truly focused on the experience of the client And that's why I've always been talking about these relationships in this very, you know, personal way.
Yeah. Such good reminders going into the new year. Tell us more about shifting subjects a little bit. Tell us more about our guest for this week.
So this is Roman of the Detox Market. And this is such a great story because, you know, I just know the Detox Market is like this legit, you know, retailer, but I didn't know the backstory. And the backstory, he'll tell you in his own words, but it really just started with a hunch and like a pop-up, right? So basically, like, it just shows you that if you have a good idea and you go for it and you keep, you know, flexing that muscle and iterating and finding the right way in, you can make it happen. And it's a really great story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So curious. Tell me more about, like, you know, how we started and what we're going to hear more about in this episode.
I think you're going to hear a lot about tenacity. You know, none of this is easy. Like anyone who is doing something that they're passionate about, they put a lot of energy into it. So you'll hear a lot about that from Roman. But you just, if you want to make it happen, the only way to get there is to keep going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that word, tenacity. Okay. That's inspiring me already. Let's get to it. Episode 273 with Roman Gayar of the Detox Market.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We are a career journey podcast talking about what it's like to define success and reach for it in the beauty and wellness industries. Today, we continue our health wisdom theme with Roman Gayar, founder and CEO of the Detox Market. From Paris to California, Roman transformed his passion for eco-conscious living into North America's go-to destination for non-toxic beauty. He started the Detox Market almost 15 years ago, and it has evolved into so much more than a retailer. It's become a platform for connection. Today, we'll connect the dots between our daily choices and our well-being. I'm excited to get into this conversation about his career journey from tech to green beauty, all on episode 273. Hi, Roman. Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty.
Hi, Jodi. Very excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
You have a beautiful scene behind you. Do you want to tell us where you're recording from?
Yeah, sure. I'm actually at home. This is my home. So you see a backyard in the back, and it's a kind of a mid-century typical LA type of house.
It looks so lush and beautiful. I am in my home office, and my home office is sort of like in the closet. Like you walk into my clothing closet, and then there's like a little corner of the house. And the ceiling in front of me is sloped. It's like the roof of the house. So I don't have beautiful foliage behind me, unfortunately. I have no windows.
Your background looks very good too. So you're like, you faked it very well. It looked like perfect.
Yeah. Well, to make the space efficient, we had to like build built-ins and things like that. So it's a great office, but no windows. So, okay, let's talk about career journey. This is the focus of the show. And we really love to start with, you know, our childlike wonder, right? When we're 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, we're daydreaming about, you know, what are we going to be when we grow up? And I'm curious, what was that first career that you dreamed of having?
I always wanted to be kind of more like on the, when I was 5 or 6, I wanted to be an architect. I don't think I knew what it meant, but like, they were like, I lived briefly in San Francisco at that time, and like our neighbor was an architect and he had all those like different rulers and things, and I found that fascinating. And that kind of evolved into I wanted to be a designer, actually, kind of design object and things like that. And it really stuck to me until like I was probably 15 or so. So I was you know, trying to design new type of bottles, and you know, I don't think I was great at it though.
So that's almost like designing things in that respect is almost like inventing.
It's, yeah, I love the invention part of it. I wish I could find those drawings, actually. I was sure they were fascinating, and I had a very supporting parents that, you know, told me, like any parents, you're absolutely great. But I'm sure they were like not great at all.
I have two teenagers, and my 14-year-old daughter, I think, is a very talented artist, and sometimes she won't show me things because she says, oh, you're just going to tell me it's great. And I tell her, I am honest with you. Like, I've always been honest with you. So the work just really, really is great. So she doesn't believe me though. I'm sure your work was great.
Thank you,
Roman.
Thank you.
So, okay, into your teens, it sounds like that was like considered a real consideration. So, you know, going into those college years, what did you switch to as a career focus?
So, you know, what's very interesting in France compared to the US is when you're 18, well, basically when you're 17, before like finishing high school, you have to decide the route you're going to take. And so if you want to be a doctor, you have to like apply to medical school when you're 17, and then you get there when you're 18, and then it's like kind of a 8 or 10 year kind of program. But it's like for lawyer, it's the same thing. If you want to do business, same thing, like engineer. And so it's pretty crazy. At 17, they ask you, okay, what do you want to be? And then it's very hard to change route. If you're 25 and you say, I want to be a doctor, basically people say, no, too late. That was, that decision was 7 years ago. And so when that happened, basically what I did is decided to go more on the business side, so business school, and which allows you to do many different things, actually, because it's the most widely open like route you can take. So that's what I did, and studied in France and England as well.
So what was like the exciting first job that you got in business then at the start of your career?
One was not the first job, but maybe my first internship that lasted 2 months, which was extraordinarily fun because I was working in a private theater in Paris on the Champs-Élysées. And you have one theater that was just made for premieres and private events. And that had a beautiful theater, but also like an event place that was quite big where you could, you know, fit, you know, 300-400 people. And I was there for the entire summer. With very little supervision, I would say, and you know, have access to all those like parties and things, and so that was very, very fun.
That sounds like a great first job. One of my early jobs, not the first one, maybe the second one, I was working at a startup website, and the focus of the website was nightlife. So my job was to go out to nightclubs. I'm not joking. My job was to go out to nightclubs and get to know the. Like the DJs and the door people and the party promoters, and then write about it. So that was a good young person's job.
That is a great young person job. And the goal of that type of job is that it doesn't last too long, because if not, if it becomes your long-term lifestyle, it's difficult, right?
Well, this was 1999 when startup culture was just, you know, becoming an exciting thing. And this company never raised any money of any substance. So it didn't go anywhere. Yeah. But it was a great time and I made good friends, right? Which is kind of part of those first jobs. So let's move into this clean beauty world, because you've been in this space for quite a long time. Which means that you were up against a lot of people saying, no, don't do that, or why? Why are you doing that? So take me on the journey, the inception of, like, you know, what inspired you to even start exploring non-toxic beauty as a possible career path?
Yeah, absolutely. So at that time, I was actually in tech in San Francisco, so doing something, I would say, radically different. And I got into that world through a friend of mine who's a breast cancer survivor, and was the first person who introduced me about toxicity in general, right? And so in the air and what you eat and, you know, and everything around you, including personal care products. That discussion was, so it's an old friend of mine I've known for a long time, but that discussion was back in 2008, 2009. At that time, you didn't have a whole lot of resources that you have now, right? Explaining those things. But I did some research and found out that, you know, one, clearly there were some questionable ingredients in beauty products. The second thing was that the industry was widely unregulated. And that's something that we all know now, or like a lot of people know now, you know, that, you know, there's very few regulations, even though it changed, you know, a little bit like recently. But back then, no one knew, you know, and me coming from France, where there is a regulation for everything, right? Like the size of a baguette is something defined by law almost, you know, so it's like, I was really stunned about that. And the last thing I found out was a new generation of brands that I felt were doing everything right. They had beautiful packaging, great stories, incredible like ingredient lists. So not having the questionable ingredients, but more importantly, focusing on the true natural actives, and also kind of products that worked. that was kind of like the big thing, the shift from like kind of the old style of natural, what's called natural beauty, you know, in the 90s or 2000s, of like a very granola, very like, you know, with beautiful intention, but like the delivery of the product was not at the level that consumers wanted back then, right? And so that new generation really had the whole package. And I couldn't understand that you had like this potentially like, you know, like healthcare crisis, like a self-regulated industry. And at the same time, a big group of people, like very health conscious, like I was living in between San Francisco and LA at that time. So that's the most health conscious like group of people you can find. And they didn't even know about it. I was telling my friends and they're like, what are you talking about? You know, you're a conspirationist. And so I created Detox as a 2 month pop-up. Was really like, for me, it was a side project that I didn't want to do. I didn't know anything about retail. I didn't know anything about the beauty industry. So it was a 2 month pop-up in November 2010. And the idea was to create this positive experience around what I called green beauty back then, right? And the vision was that, like, that the beauty needed to be cleaner, more transparent. I still truly believe in that, like transparency is very, very important. People then make their own choice, and more sustainable. So that was the idea of like kind of green beauty. The second foundation was that health, beauty, and wellness were going to merge together. And so in the first iteration of the Detox Market, we had a lot of different things, like including a matcha tea bar. We had like, no one knew matcha tea. It's hard to believe, but people are like, what the hell is this? And so we were like, you know, doing like a matcha tea, like with, you know, the bamboo whisk and all of that. We had a cold pressed juice bar. We had a whole tea section. So it was kind of like this idea of holistic beauty.
So all of this was happening, this pop-up, while you still had your day job,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. So at that time on the side, you're meeting brand owners and investigating different trends. Like how much of your time was this taking up? Like, were you having your day job till like 7 o'clock at night and then you're staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning working on this?
I was very flexible on my day job because I was mm-hmm. already an entrepreneur. So I had like, I was mm-hmm. kind of like organizing my days where I want. And the first 2 months I was every day on that store. So like that, mm-hmm. that was my life, right? I kind of put a pause, but I thought it was just a 2 month thing and then I would go back to what I was doing.
Okay, so let's talk about this 2 months, right? You yeah. gave yourself like, let me do this for 2 months, see what I learned. So this is almost like the equivalent to the test and learns we do yeah. digitally, right? In marketing, right? Let's see what I can learn, where it's going to lead me. What were you surprised by the most from those 2 months?
Ah, that's a good question. I would say two surprises. The first one from a business standpoint was that my theory was completely wrong. Like, people didn't care about those products. So like, you know, it's people will come and they're like, what the hell are you talking about? And we're like, yeah, this is a new generation of brands, and explaining about ingredient lists and trying to educate about the thing. People are like, yeah. You know, it's like, and you know, they'll be like, it seems like it's a great thing you're doing, and they will leave, right? So mm-hmm. great. And we were on Abbot Kinney. We had like this beautiful house. It was beautifully decorated. It was like the whole experience was great, right? But our sales really, really sucked. So that was the first learning, but it was not the most important one. Obviously, if not, we would have shut down the whole thing. The most important one actually was extraordinary fun. I never worked in retail before. And I was fearing it a little bit, going and talking to people and trying to sell. I'm not necessarily a sales guy, like, you know, trying to sell. So I think a lot of the foundation of Detox Market was based on that. The fact that I didn't know anything about retail. I was not personally comfortable trying to sell products. I was very comfortable educating people about it and say, listen, did you buy it or if you want or not, you know? And the experience was amazing. The customers we had were just phenomenal. They would stay and hang out and have some teas. And we're selling also like chocolate bars you know, like very clean, all organic with 2 ingredients. And people would just hang out and spend time. And it was so fascinating. That part was like great. And I was working every day. I was on the floor with the team like every day. Sometimes I was alone. And so that was very fun.
How did you learn to sell and not just be a clerk?
I think I still don't know how to do it, to be honest. I'm not. What I'm good at is to tell the story, to tell truly what I think about a product, right? And create a positive environment for people to shop if they want. But I've never been a good person at kind of closing a deal. To that day, we don't have sales like with sales associate. We don't have sales goals, specific sales goals. Like, you know, any retailer will have, you know, now, you know, we have indication, but we don't have like, oh, you have to meet that thing. If not, like whatever happens, right? Every day is like, you didn't meet your goal. And we're not like that.
Earlier in my career, I worked in the corporate office of L'Occitane in Provence. And we had, you know, hundreds of stores in the US at that time. And during the holidays, everybody from corporate would go work in the stores. And I loved it because, yeah, first of all, the wrapping, the gift wrapping at L'Occitane is always so beautiful. And hearing the customers' questions. And I was in the creative department, right? So it was so amazing for me to have that resource, that first party data, right? Of understanding the questions the customer had, what would get them to convert to actually take it to the register, how to make conversation. It was also brand new for me. I miss it because all of our clients now are third party retailers, right? Like they, you know,
yeah,
there's no, we're not, I don't have any clients in at Beast Beauty who's own their own stores. So that's become, you know, actually quite rare to own your own store at this point. So, but it's such an incredible laboratory, right? To have access to the customer that way.
It is. And I always said that when I'm completely like, out of ideas or inspiration, you know, you go back to the store and talk to the team, and like the level of like insight and creativity you get is amazing, right? It's amazing because to be constantly in contact, it's, by the way, it's very tiring. Everyone who I think people don't understand, before you worked actually in retail for not 2 days but like multiple months in a row, and you or years, you don't realize how tiring it is, like every day to be like, you know, helping people. And it's invigorating when you have a great day and people are happy. It's amazing. And but anyway, you get all this energy and all this knowledge from the store. So I'm very happy that actually we still have a very good and vibrant stores.
So tell me about the thought process from, this is a 2-week project, a test and learn, and the transition into being a full-time focus.
It was actually a fairly long process. It was more of a 2 months extended month by month for a while. And so what happened is that we had this location for 2 months, and 2 months is, as you know, very, very fast, right? And by mid-December, we're like, what are we going to do? We did the whole setup, and we're not making money, but as long as I'm not paying myself and I work for free, and you know, we're just losing a little bit, it would be too bad to just, you know, stop it. And we really had that kind of Venice community around, people were coming, so it was really fun, and I felt I wanted to continue that, so I decided to continue and told the landlord, can we add a month? He was like, yeah, that's fine. And so the guy was a very, like, a famous designer called Sean Nibb. I don't know, he designed a bunch of things in LA, very talented guy, and he was like, just listen, tell us when you want to leave and I'll just assume you stay, you know. And so that's what happened. We continued slowly, we were still not making a lot of sales, and kind of like started building a little bit. We had regulars and we had a lot of press. So the press was coming. Everyone felt it was very interesting. It was, you didn't have like beauty stores on Abbot Kinney at that time. Hard to believe now. Like, and so for people who listen, Abbot Kinney is a very trendy street in Venice, California, which now you go looks like a mall, right? You have all the beauty brands, all the D2C brands, like everyone is there. Back then was like a few art galleries, some indie stores, some great restaurants. But when we opened a beauty store there, everyone felt was definitely not the right location for a beauty store. Beauty stores were in Santa Monica, in Beverly Hills, in some areas of West Hollywood, but clearly not on Abbot Kinney. And yeah, we decided to continue. And there's this day, which is an interesting day because it shows also how little I knew, where we received an email from WWD. And WWD says, we're doing like a whole story about the best concept stores in the world right now. We want to feature you guys. We want to send you a photographer. So I don't know anything. So I'm like, I ask someone, Tim, what is WWD? And the person is like, I think it's a trade magazine. I'm like, oh, it's a trade magazine. Okay, so I'm like, okay, great. Yeah, tell them to come whenever, like whatever, you know. I think I arrived late, which I don't usually do, but like I arrived late at the meeting because that's something. They were extraordinarily polite, knowing now what I know about WWD, which I didn't know. They were like very polite, the nicest people. And I forgot about it. Right? I literally, we answered all the questions, we served them tea, it was like, great, they took pictures. And next thing I know, like like phone is ringing all the time. And then like there's people coming, but not people buying stuff, people coming and taking pictures. And then I realized this thing come out, we had a full page on WWD, you know, the printed magazine, the Beauty Inc. And saying we're one of the best, you know, with like we were like with basically Fred Siegel. Well, I think we're probably between Fred Siegel and Colette, right? And so then I was like, so those guys are for real. And so that was the first time we had an external validation that our concept was good from people who really knew knew their stuff, right? And I think that's the first time that I felt maybe I should actually continue and think about doing something and moving that concept in different cities. So I've been eternally grateful to WWD for that. I told them the story. I spoke at a bunch of events for them, and I'm always grateful for them.
So now it's 6 locations. There's obviously a lot more language in the industry and by the consumer around ingredients, origin stories of ingredients, supply chain of ingredients. You mentioned that you don't have traditional daily sales goals like other retailers. So what is your vision for moving not just your business forward, but the industry forward?
Absolutely. So the landscape changed drastically, right, in the past kind of 15 years. If you look at back then, we selected one brand per category. Try to make it as simple as possible as a story is like, okay, if you're looking for a hair care brand, this is it. If you're looking for makeup, this is it. Now we have like so much choice, even looking at our like ingredient, like restriction list, which is a very, like as narrow as it gets, right. As like strict as it gets, you still have a lot of choices. Right. So I think us and other players in that space, we kind of like really team together and kind of like played a very good role in making those changes, right? And so I think that's people are now like more careful and they want to look at what's in the ingredients. In the past few years, more and more you've been looking, like everyone has been looking at obviously sustainability, which was the next big thing. Is once you start looking at ingredients and try to go for like non-toxic or more natural options, the next thing is like how do you make it as green as possible in terms of ingredient, formulation, packaging, but also like use, how do you use it? And so that battle is, we're in the middle of it. It's a much more difficult one than the ingredient one, because the reality of the ingredient one is as soon as, it took a while, but as soon as we were able to talk to the product manufacturer, convince the bigger like even companies that was the way to go to be more transparent and be really careful and put like strict guidelines on ingredients, it was not that complicated to reach, right? The whole sustainability is thing, and carbon footprint, water footprint, waste footprint is much more complicated. And there is no easy solution, right? You cannot say, oh, let's ban plastic altogether and then everything is solved, right? That will solve a bunch of problems. It will create some others. So it's always a balance. Mm-hmm. And so that's like right now, I would say our current battle is to try to understand how we can overall decrease all the different footprints that we have. Again, carbon, plastic, waste, water footprints. And something we're in the middle of doing right now, we're almost done, and we have the initial results of it, is we went through every single product, so a few thousand products, and looked at all their footprints. So analyze everything from ingredient extraction to shipping, to manufacturing, to packaging, to usage, right? And to disposing of the product. So the whole product life cycle from beginning to the end, and looking at which, you know, like where we are compared to others and what products are better than others and how to improve. And that's the next, you know, it's the current thing, but it's very, very obviously needed.
So you're growing this business in categories that are a little a little harder to educate on, right? Require more time to educate. It's very much a full-time job, but like, I'm wondering, how do you carve out time for yourself when you're, you know, probably so invigorated by moving your programs forward?
That's, I have ups and downs for that. You know, there's like moments where clearly I have no time and moments where I have more time. I actually really like working, so it's not really an issue, I would say. You know, when it's, especially when it's working on things like that, the thing I don't like to do is legal work, which unfortunately when a company, you know, start reaching a certain size, that's what you end up doing a lot. But on all those things, I'm actually very passionate, and so it's not really work, right? It's not really a thing. After that, the most, like, I would say the biggest change I had in the past few years is that now I do have days where I actually don't work. For a solid, I think, 10 years, I don't, besides maybe Christmas, New Year's, and maybe Thanksgiving Day, I don't think I had a day where I was completely out of the thing, which now I have, like, yeah, now it happens. So it's trying to protect yourself a little bit, but also having a great team and splitting that responsibility, making sure also all the team members have that ability to have a personal life.
I'm an entrepreneur too, so I completely connect with you on the fact that, like, building my business is fun, right? Mm-hmm. It's invigorating. It's exciting. My brain does not shut off, right? So I have to work really hard to quiet it when I'm doing other things, right? I take plenty of breaks from my day job physically at my desk, right? But my brain, it gets inspired all the time. Like, I was doing college tours with my son and I was watching the admissions people present about the school. And I was like, wow, that deck is so good. I want to reorganize my agency presentation the way they have organized their school presentation. Like, so like, here I am in a college campus, right, in a different state. And yet I'm being inspired by a team that has nothing to do with my day job, but they're inspiring me to do mine better. So, I mean, that's the fun of loving what you do. Right? Which is that you aren't drained by it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's the, and it's hard to actually keep it, to keep the, I don't know about your journey specifically, but I know, so you're in contact with many entrepreneurs, but what I've seen is a lot of entrepreneurs miss the early days of their journey, which, and I'm part of that, but if I'm really honest, like with myself, and my wife reminds me of that sometimes, is looking back at like the beginning, it was horrible. I wouldn't sleep. Yeah. I was like so stressed about everything. Like anything was like, you know, when you have like no cash, you have no, anything is at a level of, are you going to be able to pay people? Like, it's not even paying yourself. You already, like, I was for 2 or 3 years, I didn't pay myself. I knew I was not going to be able to do it, but like paying others, and everything was so stressful. And it's weird that there's a selective memories for entrepreneurs where we completely forget about that.
I have not forgotten about that. And I rejoiced in the day where my business got big enough that I could hire a bookkeeper to manage all the finances, because I was doing it in a notebook. You know, I didn't have any like Excel skills. I was like writing things down in a binder. And I remember that day like it was yesterday. It was so much joy. It was so exciting to pass off things that I've just really had no acumen in and was a time suck for me. Okay, so let me ask my last question before we move on.
Sure.
We talk a lot about empathy on this show and what kind of role empathy plays in creating success, right? And connecting with the customer. I imagine it's really important for you in the way that you build the business and service your customers as they walk into the store. Tell us about how you use empathy as a way to drive the business forward.
It is very important to us, because the foundation of Detox was about kind of like transparency and cleaner ingredients. And so specifically, especially at the beginning, we had a lot of customers coming with health concerns, right? Needed way more help than a regular customer. Old Tao say, for how people would just come and just buy something and, you know, and like, you know, it was really digging into the ingredient list, seeing if it works with that person, and maybe the person would return it multiple times, which makes total sense, right? And so the beauty of that was that I think people who were attracted to work at Detox and people who were attracted to shop at Detox were similar people who all had something in their life that was somehow not, you know, not perfect, right? Not, and they needed to go and dig a little more. And I believe that those people have more empathy. And the result of that thing was that it took us quite a bit of time to actually ramp up, especially at that time, for many reasons, the market did not exist. But we have, to that day, customers who've shopped with us since the beginning. And we have a cohort of customers that have been extraordinarily loyal compared to other. We're mostly an e-commerce company now, but our loyalty is very, very high. And I think it's based on that, based on the fact that we're not a retailer in a sense of we're selling. We're really trying, we're mostly like first purpose-driven and trying to help people. And the people who work at Detox, like the Detox ambassadors in the stores, or the marketing team, the merch team, the fulfillment center team. We have our own fulfillment centers as well. Everyone is really here to kind of like help, much more knowledgeable than I am actually.
Well, thank you. That wraps up our interview segment. I appreciate you, Roman, for your honest answers. And now we have a few minutes for some fan questions. So, this is a really great question from a fan. You host a lot of events at the store for the community. What's one of your favorite events to be at?
Oh, that's a very good question. I still really like the founders event when we connect the founders with people and create kind of like a special moment. I prefer when they're at night. We had a big one I missed because I couldn't make it. It was in Toronto, but with May Lindstrom that we launched in Canada, and said that was a great moment. People had a great time there. We had a great called House of Detox. We did a partnership with Cezanne, you know, the clothing brand. We took over one of their showroom and retrofitted into kind of a detox place for the day. And so we had Audacity, who was doing a skin consultation. And then we had Innocence doing like hair, and we had like, we're making teas and it was so, so fun, the full day. So I think that was my favorite event like recently.
And someone's asking, are you going to open any new locations anytime soon?
Yeah, we're always looking into it. I cannot say where, but yes, we're actively looking into it. If anyone has any idea of a city, I mean, we have our own ideas, but we're welcoming any suggestion.
I love that. This is an interesting question because it goes back to what we started talking about in the beginning. If you were to completely change careers today, what would you do? So this makes me think back to 17-year-olds. And if you're a 17-year-old in France now, are you going to pick business or are you going to, you know, become a physician or a lawyer, right? Did you make the right choice at 17?
That's a very good question. You know what? I think I would do the same. The big thing, the big mistake I didn't make was that I specialized in finance at the end and did a master's at LSE for that. And everyone did like investment banking in London, and I'm so glad I didn't do it. And I decided to go back to the US and work there and do something completely different, because my life, I think, would have changed drastically. I think it would be much richer, but probably not as happy.
Well, this was so fun. Thank you so much, Roman, for joining us for our 273rd episode. And for our listeners, if you like this episode, please rate and review. Thank you for listening. As always, make sure you're following us on your favorite podcast platform and Instagram to learn about all of our upcoming episodes. And thank you all for joining us. It was so great to spend time with you, Roman.
Julie, thank you so much for having me. And thanks again for everything.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.